Accession number 12385, Rule 11.
Rule 11. If I just say a couple of questions here, just to get us off, as I said. You said one of the things you said to me was that you had a great admiration for the courage and valour of the anarchists. Could you tell me a bit more about that?
Oh, yes. Well, the anarchist fighters, as should be divorced from the leadership, which have a philosophy that was incompatible with the fighting for the Republic generally, because anarchists don't believe in any government, and whereas the communists and the socialists were wholeheartedly behind the Popular Front government, the anarchist leadership to a great extent were always at loggerheads with the government. But in the Basque provinces, we were cut off from the rest of Spain, and the anarchists fought very well alongside us, and with great ferocity and great bravery and so on, as did all of them. And we communists considered ourselves a little bit superior insofar as we were always used as the shock troops, Brigadas de Choque, they said, whereas the nationalists, the Basque nationalist troops, were sort of kept back. We and the socialists, especially the United Socialist Party, took the brunt of the fighting. And perhaps I could digress a little bit here. The young United Socialist Party, the young Communist League and the young Socialists amalgamated, although the Communists and the Socialists, the main parties, didn't amalgamate, the youth did, so that they called it the Socialist Unificados, and they fought also with tremendous bravery, especially as a bit later on, when we were up in the hills, in the mountains, in the far north of the province there, and they were...
Of the Basque Country.
Of the Basque Country. And we were having to retreat step by step, because to a certain extent we thought we were going to be surrounded several times.
Sorry, what date was this?
This would be the end of, this would be, I presume, in August.
36.
August 1936. That I've got a chronicle of the events, if you wanted those. Roughly, and then all that time we were fighting, and in the mountains there, I suppose, according to the books on warfare, there would be skirmishes, really, but they were very active skirmishes. We were losing a lot of soldiers, that they already had armored cars, and already the Italian Capronis were coming over and bombing us, even at that time. So that step by step we retreated. And to leave out the details, which unless I refer to some notes I made at the time, eventually we retreated to the one to... to Irun, the city on the border with France. And, of course, there we had to make a stand because that was the lifeline between the Basque provinces and the outside world, unless you go by sea, of course, because both the Basque provinces and Santander and the Asturias, we were encircled by this time by the by Franco's forces. And when we came, the other was a sort of gradual breaking in of the untrained militias, because it was fighting, sort of guerrilla fighting in the mountains, and a few trenches dug and so on, and retreats. But when we got to Irun, there we had to really dig in there, and that was of great ferocity there that they brought in the Moorish troops and the Legion Extranjera, the Foreign Legion, and they threw just everything at us.
How many of you were there?
Pardon?
How many of you were there in Iran?
How many of us? Oh, I couldn't say without referring back over this time, but several battalions of, by this time, the, I don't know whether the, our battalion had changed its name again I think by this time we're fighting under, I have got the name which I can refer to, but it forgotten me. It was only on September the 1st that the Battalion Paratagua was formed, composed of communists. I'm trying to recollect the name of I think it was the Miabe, I gave you those photographs that is on our flag there. That there were some ridges overlooking the town, and we dug in there. We built trenches we fought, whatever we did, we couldn't withstand the bombing of, by this time also the German Air Force had come in with their Fokker, three-engined Fokker fighters, and the Capronis, we had no aircraft at all at that time, and no anti-aircraft guns. We just had our ordinary machine guns, not even Russian machine guns at that time. We just had the ordinary Hotchkiss gun that the Spanish army was equipped with. And it was got so terrific, the bombardment there, that we were driven out, I would say, over a period of 10 or 14 days, we were driven from these heights once a day or every other day, and we're driven out simply by the we had very, very little artillery, one or two 75mm field guns, whereas they brought up a whole mass of artillery. They had armored cars and small tanks, and so they drove us down from these heights there. They'd bomb us in the day, and then we'd come back, and then when the
when would you come back?
We'd be driven from these from the heights and from our trenches, and we'd be driven back from the not from the town itself that was still there. We were fighting in front of the town, and our left flank was on the river Bidisoa, that and that was the frontier between Spain and France. They couldn't go over that, but several times the artillery shells, they would be, several times they landed in France from the fascists. And I remember, especially on, I think, a Saturday and Sunday, you'd see all the people from the French side crowd down to the river to watch this battle going on their doorstep, sort of thing. That and there, once we were driven off, and the fascists occupied our trenches, then we'd have the order to retake the trenches, which we did repeatedly, time after time.
How did you retake the trenches if they had such strong...
Yes, with dynamite bombs, with rifles and bayonets and hand-to-hand fighting. And at that time, too, there was a great shortage of... in those very early months, there were very, very grave... shortage of hand grenades, which we had many people, miners that had come from Asturias and miners that had come from Santander, and they made homemade dynamite bombs by stuffing empty cans with dynamite and putting a fuse on the thing. And then whenever we went, we were festooned with these dynamite bombs, three or four of them on each one. And then we'd be smoking either a cigarette or a cheroot or something. We'd just tip it to our to the fuse, or sometimes to this fuse hanging from our belts, and light the dynamite bombs and throw it into the trenches.
Were they effective?
Oh, most effective. Yeah, of course they were filled with all sorts of things like bolts and nuts and all that sort of thing. That anyway, we and I suppose we fought with greater ferocity than even the fascists were capable.
Were there women fighting alongside you at this
Oh,
stage?
Yes, the women still at that time were fighting along. By this time, the number of women had dwindled, but they were in each company two or three, half a dozen women, not as many as when we were fighting in San Sebastian, of course, but and at this time, of course, no longer were they in dresses and so on. They were dressed exactly the same as we were, in the ordinary denim blue overalls and so on. And of course, a lot of us had hand pistols too, because I was a sort of, I don't know what you could call it, perhaps an honored guest or something. The first thing they did when I got to Spain, they presented me with a very fine Spanish machine pistol there, that, which I used to some effect. And but eventually... it was too much. We lost so many. And I forgot to mention here the great ferocity, too, shown by the French at that time, fighting alongside us in their own battalions. the French people that had come across the border in the first days of the fighting. And I forgot to mention that there were several columns of French Frenchmen up in the hills alongside us. I tend to forget these things that fighting, so we were a mixed bunch when we were retreating from up in the mountains there. It's wrong to call them hills, of course they were quite high mountains, and we were retreating. We were a great band of brothers of French and Belgian, anarchists, communists, socialists, and nationalists too. I don't disguise the fact that the Basque nationalists didn't fight. They fought too. But perhaps their commanders didn't push them into the most most dangerous places with a loss of so many lives.
Could you give me an example of that?
Well, not really, no. It's just that, and of course that might be too, the communists felt they'd always taken the main brunt of the struggle, and they, to a certain extent, this might have been in the mind of people. I don't want to denigrate the any section of those that we fought amongst. You couldn't say that, oh, so-and-so and that, that battalion ran away or something like that. There was always so much overwhelming might against you that we all ran at times, and then we'd stopped, and then we came back and fight again.
How was discipline maintained among this sort of motley band of...
Pardon?
How was discipline maintained among this sort of conglomerate of different political groups who were fighting?
Well, each one fought under their own... for instance, the communists would have general staff running the thing, and the anarchists would have theirs, and the socialists and the young socialist unificados, they would be more or less in with the communists. The overall, there must have been an overall plan for such and such a thing, but I think in such a situation where you had so much overwhelming might against you, there was just the question you dug in and held whatever you could. There wasn't a question of planning any advance against the enemy. We were not in a position to do that. So that, but there must have been some overall command, because there was the overall command of the government of Euskadi, which is the government of the Basque provinces, that was in power in Bilbao.
Bill, where did you sleep at night?
Oh, well, you just slept on the ground or in foxholes or whatever, you say.
So you didn't return to Irun then? You stayed, you didn't return to Irun occasionally or not?
Return to?
To Irun. Did you return to Irun?
No. Irun was quite a separate thing. We were fighting outside Irun on the hills. And I want to differentiate between the hills just outside Irun, which were ordinary hills, and the mountains that we gradually retreated from. No, there wasn't a question of retreating to Irun. The food was brought up from Irun to us, and we just slept. You couldn't just sort of leave your trenches or foxholes and retire there. You just had to keep there, and then it was often at night we retook the positions. We'd be blasted out of these positions, and repeatedly, you felt you were you know, what can we do? You know, it's just flesh and blood against all this metal and machinery and bombs and everything else like that. But when the leaders, and I've got a feeling, trying to analyze my own position, I suppose I was scared shit, really, that, but you were more scared of being scared than anything else, that if they had the word, once you've retreated, and then they said, now, the sergeants or the lieutenants would say, camaradas, adelante, comunistas, adelante, and so you just went forward, and many of your comrades fell, wounded and dead and dying. And then eventually it was just too much, and the order came to withdraw from on. I've forgotten all this time you said about retreating to Irun. Well, Irun was being completely pulverized every day by the big bombers from Italy and Germany, so that it wouldn't have been... of course, the cellars would have been some help, but the people scattered out into the fields, and then we retreated, and then eventually we retreated beyond Irun. I've forgotten the name of the little the villages where we retreated from. And of course, that was our last lifeline to France. And it is said that the anarchists, I have no proof of this, it is said, just a rumor spread amongst them, that the anarchists were very, they wanted to fight house by house in Irun. And when they... when that wasn't granted to them, because there were just, I think, one or two battalions of anarchists there, that they blew up many of the towns in Irun. That houses in Irun, and that added to the devastation. But all we knew that. There were explosions as we were retreated, but whether that was from the bombing or whether that was from the, as some people said, anarchists, and that is something I learned afterwards.
Can I ask you a few questions about this fighting before we go on?
Yes.
How were the casualties dealt with at the front?
Well, they were just the casualties that you... Luckily, we were quite close to Irun, so that you'd have, we had stretcher parties. They would, in the front line, take them to the back there, and then they'd be put on camion, as they call them, covered trucks with a canvas cover, and taken to the rear, and... many of them, of course, couldn't be moved, or there were too many. Those were just had to be left when we retreated, of course, but we recovered as many as we could. There would be many very seriously wounded that would be helped by their comrades, that if they were walking wounded and so on, back. They had quite a fleet of ambulances. They were sort of makeshift trucks with covering of canvas covering on them, like the army trucks you see today, or that were shown you saw in World War II, that type of thing. That, and there'd be a big red cross painted on that.
Did you have any medical equipment yourself with you?
No, there would be to each group of people, to each platoon, there'd be someone with some medical equipment, so that but we actually didn't have anything. That did come later on, in the couple of months later, but at that time, not.
And the other thing I wonder was, how was the food brought up to you?
Pardon?
How was the food and stuff brought up to you?
How what?
How did the food and ammunition supplies come to you?
Oh, well, it came up mostly on mule track or burros, donkeys carrying it on their back, that there were sort of no roads. If there were any roads, they'd be bombed, so that the ammunition came up. And it wasn't as though we had shells or anything. We didn't have the guns for shells. It was just a question of machine gun ammunition and ammunition for the pouches for the riflemen and so on. And even at that time, there were many, many people fighting still with shotguns and so on our side. We hadn't been properly weren't fully equipped, even so, but most of in our battalion we had rifles. That
what sort of rifles?
Spanish rifles. Very good.
So was there some standardization of ammunition then in
Pardon?
That case? Was there some standardization of ammunition then in that case?
There's plenty of ammunition.
No. Because you all had the Spanish rifles, were you able to use the same ammunition?
Oh, yes. The ammunition is sort of universal. It's 303 bullets that... That would be the same as Mausers and so on. At that time, I think at that time that I had a stocky Mauser, actually, that not a Spanish rifle, but most of them were rifles, because we'd taken all the arsenals that were in the hands of the fascists and distributed the machine guns and the rifles and so on there. We had quite a lot of pistols from Ebar, which was one of the chief armament manufacturing, that small arms manufacturing places in Spain, which was located in Ebar, just north of Bilbao, so that we had quite a lot of machine pistols and these homemade dynamite bombs, which were of sort of great danger to yourself as well, of course. That, but anyway, eventually we withdrew from...
Can I ask you some more things about this? Yeah. Well, what sort of food were you having?
The food was tolerably good. I found that at that time there was no shortage of food in Spain. In those first couple of months, which even a month or so later developed into a severe shortage, but we were fed on gabanthos. I think they're called chickpeas over here, and in the States, gabanthos and beans and And I presume the meat was horse meat or something like that, and the occasional beef, I presume. Sometimes chicken and that sort of thing. So for those up till about this time, we were feeling quite well. And then we gradually, without my notes, I can't give the exact dates, but we withdrew from Hebron.
Can I just ask some more things about this area? More questions, Bill. You were talking about the fighting alongside the women. What did you think of them as fighters?
I only know that the people that fought alongside us, they never... Maybe they were just as frightened as we were, but they didn't show it, and as they didn't show it, we felt we couldn't show it either, so that we found they were magnificent. As I said, there were only some, by this time, a few dozen scattered about through the whole army, through the whole militia, I should say. It wasn't an army, it was a militia. And in theory, you join the militia, and it's like all militias, you could join, and then if you didn't like it, you could leave, sort of thing. But in fact, no one did do that, but it wasn't at that time. It was only till much later that they had that they were able to build a unified army in Spain, and never at all in the Basque provinces. But